1400 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Interfacing complete. Please stand by. Now downloading Tech Talk Radio with Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ. Tech Talk Radio, it's technology you can understand. And now, here are Dr. Richard Schertz and Jim Russ.
Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. I'm Dr. Richard Schertz.
And I'm Jim Russ.
Well, always, as always, interested in things going on in the world with technology. The Syrian children are going to be taught to learn how to code. These are Syrian refugees that are actually living in an adjacent country. They're instead of letting them waste their time in a refugee camp, they have a project to teach them how to code. I think this is a brilliant idea because it gives kids hope, and then they don't turn to violence. Russia does not like Tor, which of course is the proxy server that allows you to surf the web anonymously.
Okay.
So they've offered a reward to try to hack Tor. Talk about that. They announced that this last week. And Edward Snowden's favorite operating system, which was used for anonymous surfing of the web, has a vulnerability, a zero-day vulnerability, as they say. So that's actually the operating system that he used when he was actually, you know, sending all of this NSA data you know, around the world when he was doing the dirty deed. So I'll talk about that operating system and what the vulnerability is. The device of the week we're going to talk about, GoTenna. GoTenna.
Really?
Yeah, it's a way for you to have you ever been in a remote area? There's no cell phone connection, and you've got somebody else, and you get divided from the people you're with. And you can't text them to tell them where you are because there's no cell phone connectivity. Mm-hmm. This is a way to create a private network between cell phones without using the telco system.
What a great idea!
So that's actually a nice thing. And now today I'm gonna go to the on Profiles in IT to the dark side. We're gonna go to the dark side. We're gonna talk about Albert Gonzalez. He is a computer hacker who actually stole more than 170 million credit cards and ATM numbers. He's now serving 20 years in prison. So I'll kind of give a history and the kind of parties he had when he was doing it and how he got into it. And, of course, it was a huge, huge mailbag.
Giant.
There's a letter in your mailbox.
Oh, yeah. Dear Doc.
You know what? You must have been working out because you did that with relative ease.
Well, I've been pumping mailbags. You know, sometimes people pump iron. Well,
I've
been pumping mailbags, yeah. Dear Doc and Jim, I work for a large federal agency and I've spent weeks trying to get this resolved and would like, and their help desk tells me that they don't support Apple computers. Now, here's the issue. I've got a Cisco secure desktop error when I try to connect. It said that I can't. It doesn't recognize the connection. Now I've talked to the help desk, and I said, you know, I've got a problem, and they sent me instructions for PC users, not for Mac users. Now they say that the system supports Safari browser, so you know, Macs are Safari browser, so it must support a Mac. I don't know what they're talking about. I hope you can help me work this out because I really do need to connect remotely. Well, this is Mary, a longtime listener. Well, Mary, support for Safari does not necessarily imply support for the Mac. I mean, actually, Safari is a browser. I've got Safari installed on my PC. I have four browsers on my PC. And, you know, I've got Internet Explorer, I've got Foxfire, I've got Opera, and I've got Safari, because whenever we post a new website, I like to check it out on all the different browsers.
You're kind of a mobile testing lab, so.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. And so they support Safari, but they support it on a PC. Now, if you look up all the information on the Cisco remote desktop, you'll see that that actually Cisco remote desktop will support Macs. And in fact, if you go to the Cisco website, you can download the client for a Mac. But you must have authorization for the account.
Mm-hmm.
Now, of course, your IT department has authorization. And they would normally download the client and make it available to you on the local network. Now, your IT department has decided they're not going to support Mac. So they're not going to give you that that client so you could have it. I don't know why they've made that decision. Now, even if you could get a hold of a Mac client, they can still configure the VPN so that it will only accept one particular operating system. And and if they've configured it so that it won't accept OS X, you're just out of luck. Now, I don't know why they've made that policy decision, but I think they've just decided people that they just didn't want to support a lot of different operating systems. Now, you could run a virtual Windows machine on your Mac.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's what I would suggest as an option. Now, there are a couple of virtual Windows machines you could use. One that's you could get Parallels 8 for Mac. That's a virtual machine. It costs around $79. Now, you could visit the Apple Store to see what sort of virtual machine they would recommend. They might have a good idea. Parallels 8 has gotten some really outstanding reviews. It's reasonably priced. VMware Fusion for Mac is another excellent choice. It's only $59. Now, both of these virtual machines support VPNs, but they must be configured properly because you also have to check with your IT department whether they're going to accept a virtual Windows machine. I mean, they just may really be persnickety about that. But the key when you set up the virtual machine is how the virtual machine is linked to the VPN. There are a couple of ways to do it, and so you have to talk to the IT department to see which way they support. So that's probably your best option, short of just getting a cheap Windows machine. We got an email from Robert in Fairfax. Dear Doc and Jim, I heard that my IT department is setting up a honeypot. Now, what is a honeypot? Now, I'm not really a techie, so I'm just curious. Thanks, Robert in Fairfax. Well, it's not really a snack. They're not setting up a honeypot in the kitchen. You go in there with crackers and honey and have honey with your tea. No, that's not what it is at all. Now, where'd the name come from? It's like a pot of honey that's left out to trap a bear. You know, a honeypot is unprotected. Now, and so a honeypot is actually an unprotected or partially protected machine, which is set up to allow malicious software or activity to compromise it. So the idea is really simple. You kind of leave that machine unprotected or vulnerable, so it's likely to get attacked in some way. Then the owners of the honeypot can examine the machine. They can look at the kind of attacks that it is mm-hmm. That people are attempting on it, and it can actually help them secure their network. And they can sort of watch what the hackers are going to try to do, and they can help build defenses against it. It's not really a bad idea. And then usually what they put on the honeypot, they put on data that looks like it's very important, but actually it's all bogus data.
It's just bait.
That's right. And so now the government agency might place a machine with falsified information on it. They might want to leak some stuff out there, and they make it look like it's confidential and secret, but actually they're just trying to get information to the enemies without in a way where the enemies think they got something really good. So I think I'm surprised you even heard that they were setting up a honeypot, but it sounds like your IT department is being proactive to try to protect the network. That's very good to hear. We got an email from Jim in Michigan. Dear Tech Talk, I just got a new computer and configured the hard drive. Now, I've got this choice about multiple partitions. Should I install one partition or two partitions? I can completely configure my machine, and I really don't know what I should do. What's the purpose of a partition anyway? Do I need it? Do I forget about it? What do you think? Well, Jim, a partition is nothing more than a way to organize the physical space on a hard drive. Typically, you think of a hard drive as a single disk, but partitioning allows you to divide it up so that it appears as multiple disks. Now, we call these logical disks because they're not actually physical disks. So you could set up two partitions on your hard drive, and the first partition would look like the C drive, and the second partition would look like the D drive. So it looked like you had two hard drives, but they would actually be in one hard drive. And so typically, your computer, if it has a single partition, you just have the C drive, and you put everything on it, all your data and all your operating system. And if you have multiple partitions, C is the first one, and you go D, E, and you keep adding more on. Now, why would you even bother with partitions? Now, some people like partitions because it makes backup easier. They could actually have a certain kind of data on one drive, and certain backup programs, you just say back up the whole hard drive. It makes it really easy to manage backup, so some people like it for that reason. Some people might have multiple partitions for encryption, because you might want to have encrypted data, and it's sometimes easier just to say, okay, just encrypt this whole hard drive, and it's easier just to manage encryption. Now, many times in the old days, people would use it for multi-boot, where you'd want to have one partition you'd boot up on Windows, and the other partition you'd boot up on Linux, for instance. So that's what I used to use multiple partitions for multi-boot. You put all the operating system in one partition for like Linux, and you put the entire operating system for Windows in the other partition. Now, sometimes people will put all their programs in one partition and their data in another position. So those are the reasons to do it. Now, in fact, I don't even use partitions anymore because I don't use multi-boot anymore. I use a virtual machine. If I want to set up two operating systems, I use VMware and set up virtual machines. So this whole idea of like booting up in another drive just doesn't make sense anymore in the day of virtual machines. And so, and also the new file systems like NTFS that's on, say, Windows are really fast. So what I do is, if you don't have a specific reason, I just leave it as one partition. But what you want to do is, you know, periodically defragment. That keeps it fast, so you don't have files spread around the place or all made contiguous. So I've got my computer set to defragment automatically every Wednesday at 1 a.m. I don't even know what's doing it. It's just done automatically. And then you can use folders to organize your data. So that's actually typically how I would handle it, and so I'll tell you, we love all your emails.
We do indeed.
And if you've got any more emails, just email us techtalk@stratford.edu, and we'll get back to you either directly or we'll cover it on the air.
Absolutely, you're listening to Tech Talk. This is Federal News Radio, heard every Saturday on. Wait a minute. This is Tech Talk heard on Federal News Radio.
Yes.
I had it backwards there.
Yes.
Because Federal News Radio is federalnewsradio.com. Tech Talk, techtalkonline.com, and of course on the radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, and 107.7 FM HD2. More of Tech Talk right after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tysons Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. And now it is time for
Profiles in IT.
Today we're going to talk about Robert Gonzalez as we move over to the dark.
You mean Albert Gonzalez?
Yeah, Albert Gonzalez.
Him too.
Yeah, what did I say?
Robert.
Yeah, Albert Gonzalez as we move over to the dark side.
They both could be called Bert, so
yeah,
you know.
Did you know? You must have known him. You must have known Albert.
No, I did not. I'm just following along with you, that's all.
That's right. Well, Albert Gonzalez is a computer hacker. And criminal. See, I add that because you can be a computer hacker and be a non-criminal.
Well, yeah.
But he was a computer hacker and criminal, and he was the mastermind behind the theft of more than 170 million credit card and ATM numbers, the biggest such fraud in history. Hmm. He's the grand champion data thief. Data thief.
If there was an award.
That's right. Robert Gonzalez was born in 1981 in Miami, Florida. Gonzalez's parents, who immigrated to the United States from Cuba in the 70s, bought him his first computer when he was 8. You know, I'm thinking they regretted that.
Probably so.
You know, he attended South Miami High School in Miami, Florida, where he was described as the troubled pack leader, the troubled pack leader of a bunch of computer nerds. I mean, I've heard of troubled pack leaders that are gangs on the street getting in trouble, but being a pack leader of computer nerds doesn't sound that bad. But I guess his trouble did lead to problems.
Yeah.
So, yeah. In 2000, he moved to New York City, and after 3 months, he moved to Kearney, New Jersey. While in Kearney, New Jersey, he was the mastermind of a group of hackers called the Shadow Crew Group. The Shadow Crew Group, which trafficked in about 1.5 million stolen credit and ATM card numbers. What they did, they set up a website, and once you registered on the website, you could buy stolen account numbers or counterfeit documents or credit card numbers, or they also had tutorials on hacking if you wanted to, you know, spruce up your skills.
Mm-hmm.
Now, according to the indictment, there were 4,000 people who registered with ShadowCrew.com. Gonzalez, whose screen name was Kumba Johnny, Kumba Johnny, was not indicted. Now, the Secret Service, you know, continued the investigation, Operation Firewall, because they figured this Gonzalez, this guy, you know, they just didn't have anything on him.
Yeah.
Because he actually wasn't, you know, he was sort of at a distance, but he laid out the strategy, but they couldn't really indict him. So they continued investigating him with Operation Firewall. Now, Gonzalez was ultimately charged with the possession of 15 fake credit and debit cards. But he avoided jail time by turning in evidence against his compatriots.
Interesting.
19 Shadow Crew members were indicted, but Gonzalez was not.
Interesting.
He returned to Miami, and he agreed to cooperate with authorities in helping them crack other kinds of hacking things. But while he was cooperating with the authorities, and the authorities thought they had him under control, he actually masterminded another hack. He stole 45 million credit cards from the TJX company in 2007.
TJ Maxx, the...
Was that the TJ Maxx? Yeah,
oh, TJ... I'm sorry. I'm never mind. You're right, TJX companies.
TJX. I wonder if that was a typo. I think TJX is correct. And that actually beat his record of what he stole in 2005, where he stole 40 million credit cards from Card System Solution. Now, then what they did, I don't know if you remember back at that, this was back in the 2005, 2007 time frame. Remember, you'd go to these stores and they would have all their cash registers connected to a wireless network in the store.
Right.
But they did not encrypt the network.
Mm-hmm.
So you could actually sit out in the parking lot and skim off all the credit card numbers and not even go in the store. So what they did... Gonzalez and 10 others went up and down Route 1 in Miami, war driving, and they located stores that had unencrypted Wi-Fi networks. They had BJ Wholesaler, DSW, that's a shoe place, Office Max, Boston Market, Barnes and Noble, Sports Authority, and TJ Maxx. So all of these companies then had unencrypted Wi-Fi networks attached to their credit card scanners and their cash registers. And so they sat out there and they just collected more credit cards. in a major thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then they expanded their work to go in and hack into the computers that businesses have to try to get at the store of credit cards directly. Gonzalez and his accomplices would hack into websites and different databases in companies using what's called SQL injection. And that's what they do is if you've got a database and it asks for an input like name, if they improperly write the code and they don't truncate the input that you give it to a certain number of characters and screen it for what you do, you can actually write a whole stream of characters which turn out to be commands for the database. And so it reads the name, but then you have all this extra stuff after the name, which is a command, and then it executes the command and you can take over the database. And so you can, and so there were many, many database entries on the web that you could actually use SQL injection and you could then take over the whole server. So they used SQL injection, and once they got into the servers for a particular company, they would deploy back doors. They would put in programs that would let them get into those servers at will anytime they want over the internet. And then they would launch sniffing attacks. Now this is where they would sit there and they would just sniff the packets coming by, and they would then look for credit card numbers, passwords, any sort of secure data that they would want. And once they would get into a company's servers, they would disable the system logs so they couldn't track what they were doing. They use what they called ARP spoofing, address resolution protocol spoofing. What that is, whenever a packet comes into a network, it's got to be forwarded to the physical address of a machine called the MAC address, and there's a lookup table that goes from IP address to MAC address, and that's called the. And what they would do, they would corrupt that table, and they would send the internal network package to a different server. That server then would inspect the data, and then it would send it on. It would allow them to do what's called a man in the middle attack.
Mm-hmm.
They would also store data on multiple hacking platforms, so in case one hacking platform went down, they had the other ones. And then they would launch this packet sniffing attack using the man in the middle attack. So they also hid their address when they would go into these servers. They wouldn't want people to track their IP address. So they would go through a series of proxy servers, so that by the time they actually went to the final server, that they might have been through five or six proxy servers, and it would be very hard for you to go back and figure out what their initial location was. The indictment also said that they tested their program against 20 antivirus programs. So they're quite actually sophisticated here. Now, he was making a boatload of money. Now, the indictment said that he threw himself a birthday party that cost $75,000. And he was complaining, and he spent a lot of money that day, and his currency counting machine broke. And he was complaining that he had to count $340,000 by hand because his currency counting machine broke.
This is a problem I can deal with.
So all these $100 bills, this is terrible work. 3,400 $100 bills, that's terrible.
I'll be burdened with that.
Now, he used several scream names because I'd change, Cumba Johnny, that was what he kind of liked that one. Soup Nazi, that's from
Seinfeld.
Soup, yep. Nazi. So, and King Chili, those were he was more, some of his more colorful ones, but Soup Nazi he used quite a bit. Now, Gonzalez, along with his friends, were featured on the fifth episode of CNBC series American Greed, episode 40. It was titled Hackers. Operation Get Rich or Die Trying. Gonzalez was arrested May 7th, 2008, on charges stemming from hacking into Dave and Buster's network. So what happened there? They actually made kind of a mistake. They actually loaded some software on the Dave and Buster's machines at the stores, and that would skim credit card number. And then Dave and Buster's would discover it. They'd shut down the machines and clear it off. And they kept coming back and reinstalling the same software. And so pretty soon, the authorities started looking at the in-store cameras, and they noticed the same guys would come back and do something and leave, and then later that day, the software was on the machines. And so they actually caught them because of that, which was really kind of stupid after he had all of this kind of thing. Finally, in 2010, he was sentenced. He's currently serving a 20-year sentence at a low-security facility in Michigan. He's scheduled to be released on 2025. So there you go, Albert Gonzalez. And, you know, when the police, when the FBI got him, they said, this Albert Gonzalez, he's a hard worker. He's focused on what he wants to do. He pays attention to detail. He's able to manage teams. I mean, he had a lot of good skills if he wanted to start a business.
Yeah.
But he just started out on the dark side. So
I have a couple of things to add. Do you know what Kearney, New Jersey is also famous for?
No.
That's where the TV series The Sopranos was set.
Oh.
That's where that crew was from. So it's funny that this is another kind of crew, a real-life crew from Kearney. I wanted to see what the head of a group of nerds who are criminals looks like. So I have a picture of him being led away in handcuffs with a scowl on his face, and he's wearing a Jack Daniels T-shirt.
Okay.
So and TJX Companies, I looked that up. Uh-huh. That's actually the parent company for all the other companies that you mentioned. BJ's. DSW, Office Max,
Boss
the Market, they're all under the same umbrella. I didn't even know that.
I had no idea.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is like three people own everything in this world, isn't it?
It is. So the thing is, this was a guy who was extremely bright. If he'd have just got a little different guidance when he was younger, he wouldn't have gone down this path.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, you take a guy like this who has knowledge and he has desire to do things, and then we lock him away for 20 years. Clearly, he needs to be punished for what he did. But isn't there something we could use him for in this country to better the rest of us? You know, to use the skills that he has?
You would think so.
You would think that that's...
He got a fairly stiff sentence. I think the reason is because... He was cooperating with the police, and they thought he was that they'd flip to help him. And while he was helping them, he was doing another scam. And because he stole another 45 million credit cards while he was helping the police. I think that ticked them off.
That probably would
be. And it looks like they went for the maximum sentence.
The word recidivist comes to mind.
Yes, yes.
Yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Hope you're paying attention, and because we're going to give you a chance to win a prize here in just a second by playing the pop quiz on Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Be right back.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment.
What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
And now, It's time for Washington's most popular and longest-running radio game show, the Stratford University Pop Quiz. Now here's your host and star of our show. No, it's not Gene Rayburn. It's not Alex Trebek. It's not Richard Dawson. It's Dr. Richard Schertz.
Welcome back to the classroom of the airways, as we like to say. And, of course, if it's a classroom, there is going to have to be an assessment. To see whether you are actually listening. Now, in order to do the assessment, we actually have a pop quiz. And those of you that have been around for a while, it's not that much of a surprise. But for new listeners, it would be a surprise. If you get the correct answer to the pop quiz, you will get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room, the Creme Dining Room. All you have to do is call in and give us the answer. Now, earlier in the show, I was talking about Albert Gonzalez. He was, we moved to the dark side, and he was one of the masterminds behind a major heist of 170 million credit card and ATM numbers. He went by a number of screen names during his short criminal career. He was arrested when he was 27. Give us one of those screen names, and you'll get two tickets to fine dining at the Escoffier Dining Room.
Okay, now you need to get that answer to us quickly, and we would ask you to dial one of these phone numbers, and the 10 digits in right succession. Yes. If you're calling from west of Miami, Florida, it's 877-936-9333. Calling from east of Kearney, New Jersey, it's 877-936-9333. And if you're calling from the parking lot of any BJ's Wholesale Club around the area, it's 877-936-9333.
Now, if you're calling from Karachi, Pakistan,
which you won't be doing,
you can use an encrypted communication link. Use Skype. That's a heavily encrypted way to communicate. Use Skype. Simply connect to Tech Talk Radio 1. And your call will be forwarded directly to the studio free of charge.
You said Tech Talk Radio 1, correct?
Tech Talk Radio 1.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The number 1.
We're still waiting for our first Skype winner in ever.
Yeah, we are. But it's someday it's actually going to happen.
I would suspect our winner is going to call us on 877-936-9333. That's what I would suspect.
It is quite possible.
Okay.
Well, let's have the net neutrality update. This is the big fight that's going on with the FCC right now. And the FCC is expected to enact new rules that would allow, or perhaps we should say fail to disallow, whether internet service providers can provide fast lanes for companies who can afford to pay. Now, when ISPs are able to decide which site's data to move the fastest, competition becomes a matter of who's willing to spend the most. Now, big companies like Netflix, ESPN, and Disney will lose because they all send a lot of data to individuals, and the ISPs would like to charge for that. And startups are going to lose because, you know, they're going to have to pay more. And the consumer loses, in my judgment. Everyone loses except the internet service providers. Now, I think this puts the whole open internet in danger. Now, the good news is the FCC has not really made the ruling yet. They've actually proposed the ruling, and you can comment on it. Now, They've had it up for a couple of weeks now, and there are literally hundreds of thousands. Last time I checked, there were almost 700,000 comments on the proposed ruling. And you can send in your comments. Simply go to fcc.gov/comments, and it's the top one on the list. www.fcc.gov/comments. And it would be nice if you'd make a comment, because I think the FCC may listen to this. This has become a hot potato.
Gotcha. Time for us to go to the phones. Let's go to line number 1, where we find Lewis, who is calling us from Rockville, Maryland. Good morning, Lewis. How are you, sir?
Pretty good, thank you.
Excellent. Dr. Schertz, please ask the question.
Yes, earlier in the show, Lewis, we were talking about a man from the dark side, Albert Gonzalez. He was a hacker who stole 170 million credit cards. What was one of his screen names?
Goomba Johnny.
Okay, very good. You get two tickets to fine dining, the Escoffier Dining Room. Stay on the line, and we'll get that out to you right away. Just leave your address or your email address would be preferred in with Andrew.
That's right. Lewis, thanks for listening. Thanks for calling. Standby on the phone here for Andrew. Are we there? I think we're there. Okay. I think we've got you got him? Good. Okay. This is Tech Talk Radio on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. Standby. We will have more of Tech Talk Radio coming up here very shortly. Standby.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. Change your life. Put your talents out there on your terms. Get full credit for your ideas and hard work, and set your own pay. If you're ready to be your own CEO, Stratford University's life-changing Masters in Entrepreneurial Management program can show you how to develop and launch your business. From writing a solid business plan to financing, legal issues, staffing, even branding and marketing. Let Stratford show you the ropes and walk you over the pitfalls of running your own business. Choose from online or in-classroom courses at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Change your life. Take charge of your future on your own terms. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. That's 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We are in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology.
You're silly today.
I know. You know, there's also something to do with net neutrality as it relates to wireless. You know, I was always talking about internet service providers like your internet in the home. But actually, most people get the internet over their cell phone.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's been a lot of interesting activity there. A couple of recent moves by AT&T and T-Mobile have net neutrality advocates quite upset. In January, AT&T announced what they called a sponsored data program, which lets content providers pay AT&T so that usage of their apps and services don't count against the customer's data plan. So this is like they're already sort of it's they're paying for a fast lane.
Mm-hmm.
And this is actually walking down a slippery slope toward the loss of net neutrality. And then T-Mobile did something. They actually put a plan that will let customers stream all the music they want from selected services like Spotify without counting against their data plan. So that way, you've got other companies that may have streaming music that you wouldn't use because it's going to go against your data plan. So this is also another way to skew this net neutrality thing where they're going to where they make extra money or they favor one website or one product over another. Now, with AT&T's sponsored data plan, the fear is that it will allow rich companies that can afford to pay to gain an unfair advantage over startups. And the fear with T-Mobile is that it's going to inadvertently give customers an incentive to choose one of the preferred music apps over one of the competitors. And all of this is sort of something that net neutrality advocates would like to avoid. So this whole thing with the FCC, I think, is going to have far, far-reaching effects. Now, let's talk about my experiences this last week. I had a major project of digital archiving.
Mm-hmm.
This was my task. We were sitting in the talking about some financial aid worksheets to help our students better plan their finances. It's while they're at Stratford, and I had created a financial aid worksheet that had all kinds of macros and very fancy things that was extremely useful. But I did it in the late 1990s, and I was telling them about it. And I said, "Well, you know, why don't we just do something like that?" And they said, "Well, that's great. Could you give us a copy of that spreadsheet?" I said, I kind of regretted that I brought it up because Now I had to find it. And it was like 1998, 1999 that I did it. So first of all, I checked all my emails. I've archived my email back to the year 2002. So I didn't have any. It was. I thought it might be an attachment on an email, but I couldn't find it there. So then I checked my laptop. All the old files wasn't there. I checked my desktop at work. It wasn't there. So then I looked on my shelf at home, and I have a stack of about 6 bare hard drives that I've taken out of various machines over the years. They're just sitting up there. These are the old hard drives, the old IDE interface, integrated drive electronics. It's the very first kind of drive interface was on the PC. And these hard drives are all like 40 gigabyte, 100 gigabyte, and they're like really old. So first of all, I had to attach these bare hard drives to my laptop. So I went and got, this could be a problem. But I went to Micro Center and I got the EasyConnect USI 2535 adapter, which was only about, $19. And it would actually, I could just plug this thing onto the data plug. I could plug in, they had a power cord for the hard drive. And then it connected directly to a USB outboard. So I just plugged it in and I could read these hard drives with my laptop. So I started looking through all this stuff. I found a treasure trove of pictures that I'd forgotten about. And so I thought, well, I better organize these pictures. And that turned out to be like a monumental effort. First of all, there were a lot of corrupted bad segments in the hard drive. So if I try to copy all the pictures, it would just get hung up on the bad picture. Mm-hmm. So then I had to go in and figure out exactly what was the bad picture. And I spent a huge amount of time copying off all these pictures. I should have probably set the thing up so I wouldn't have any particular problems there. So this is a very very interesting story.
Yes.
So then I finally found my old spreadsheet, and it was a Lotus file, WK4. Now the problem is the Excel spreadsheet would not read the old Lotus file. So I had to find a computer that had a old Windows XP or Office XP on it, which would actually read Lotus files. So I actually was able to read the Lotus file and convert it to Excel. So if you want to actually keep old files for a long time, you've always got to have some kind of operating system so you can read them. So just a small, interesting story on data archiving.
Interesting.
Yes.
This could only mean one thing.
Yeah. Hi, folks. This is David Burke.
Don't stop. He's here.
Lotus files? Are we going to go back to DAT now?
Lotus files? Oh,
wow.
Yeah. I was
Lotus
reading.
Files.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Doc, I came in here just to give you one little factoid here.
Okay.
This morning, I'm driving into work.
Right? Yes.
Stopped at the 7-Eleven. You know what they're selling at the 7-Eleven? Drones.
What?
They're selling a drone at the 7-Eleven, little propellers, the whole thing.
Wow.
I'm sure this is a high-quality item.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet it was.
And was it $39.99?
Right next to the 5-hour energy drink.
Do you pour the 5-hour energy drink
really?
Into the drone
Unbelievable.
For power?
Unbelievable.
Are they delivering Slurpees by drone?
Slurpees by drone. They have little, it's in the little box, and there you go, and boom. It's crazy. This is how it's leveled down to everyone's level now.
Everybody's getting drones.
There's a drone for your price. Whatever your price limit is, there's a drone just for you.
It's like the Yugo of drones.
There was a guy in Seattle.
Crickets.
He was almost arrested. He was taking pictures of the Space Needle.
I saw that last
Did
night
you
on
see
the
that?
News. Yeah. Almost got arrested. He almost got arrested?
No, he wasn't arrested. The police just gave him a warning.
Yeah, quit flying drones up there.
Yeah, see, he was an Amazon employee. But the thing is interesting, he was staying in a hotel that had a balcony. So he launched the drone from the balcony.
What a dope.
And then he... Listen, what if... That's something, that's something
oh, I'm I, sorry, Doc. I'm sorry. I mean,
you,
I didn't
oh,
mean you were
done,
a dope.
Dave, that's something I may do.
Well, no, not on the balcony. The question is, did he get it? Was he an astute enough pilot?
He got it back.
To get it back
he flew it over to the Space Needle. He was flying it around the Space Needle, but then he hit the window at one point.
Oh, jeez.
But it didn't break a propeller. He must have had propeller guards on it, like I have.
Right.
So he was able. So three people called 911 who were at the Space Needle saying that there's an alien ship outside the window, and they called the police. So then he flew it back, And he opened up the his patio door in the hotel room, and he just flew it right back into the hotel.
Wow.
Did he turn himself in? Or they
him? The police watched where it went.
Oh, very clever.
And about 10 minutes later, knock on the door. They gave him a very stiff warning.
And I'll bet they did.
And he said, okay.
I won't, whipping.
He said, I won't fly this drone anymore.
Never again. Yeah, so, sure.
Yeah, can you imagine the two cops down there going, weren't you watching? I thought it was the 13th floor. No, it was the 14th. No, it was three over. Jeez. That's crazy. Unbelievable.
So this guy works for Amazon. You know, because Amazon's, you know, trying to get drones.
Was he doing some product testing?
That's not going to happen.
I don't think so.
This drone stuff's out of control, Doc. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I know.
It's out of control.
It is.
I mean, I went to the Air and Space Museum for the first time in a couple of years. They've got the Predator drones now in the Air and Space Museum.
They do?
Yes. Predator drones. They got a couple other drones in there. I was quite amazed by that. I went, wow, that is a big drone.
See, this now opens up. I hadn't even thought about this. Mm-hmm. Your drone has like a 1,400-foot maximum distance from which you can go. So if you're standing on the ground, you could go straight up 1,400 feet, but if you're on the roof of a building now,
you could go even higher.
How does that work?
Okay. Yeah,
you could go higher. That's right.
It's a signal. You're up, and so it's a signal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm just paraphrasing what the doc would say.
Exactly. And if you want to go higher, you could probably hack the transmitter and boost the power and violate.
You would never do that.
Violate FCC regulations, which of course I would never do.
You wouldn't soup up a 55
I would
Chevy.
Never violate any FCC. Talking on the radio station, I would never violate an FCC regulation.
Never. No. I know you, Doc. I know you very well. You would never do something like that. Exactly.
That's amazing.
I know.
You can get a drone at 7-Eleven now.
At 7-Eleven. I looked at the box twice to make sure I just wouldn't see it like it was a toy.
Why? You should have bought it. You can expense it. Just think of the story
you could do. Okay, buddy.
How much was it?
I didn't even look at the price. I was just floored that it was right there.
Go, run like
check
the wind.
It out.
We have 15 minutes. You need to find out.
Well, I'm going to be, in the next couple weeks, I'm going to be bringing in the Google Glass. So we'll have it on the here, actually, in the studio.
Oh, so you're going to be a glass hole.
Yeah, that's right. No, I know. I'm going to bring it.
That was his joke. That wasn't mine.
I'm going to bring in somebody from the IT department. I'll bring in a Stratford glass hole. Yeah, and he'll talk about it.
Yeah, you'll need to come down.
How much do those cost?
$1,500.
Oh, I'll bet he expends those.
They're $1,500.
And that's just to photograph like everything you're doing all day?
But no, what we're trying to do is see whether we can actually use it for in the classroom, like the teacher could like do culinary demos, or use it for creating content for the online.
You still
platform.
Doing that Friday afternoon feast?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's on Thursday.
Don't show up on Friday. Don't do Friday.
Don't do Friday. Nobody's ever there.
It's on Thursday. It's on Thursday because, you know.
Traffic's terrible on Friday.
Yeah. Well, some people only eat fish on
Thursdays.
Friday.
Get out of here. No. The Catholic kids have to have the fish and the Protestants have the sloppy joes.
So if we handle it on Thursday, everybody can have whatever they want.
Well, that's
right. We need a Catholic only table,
that would go over well.
All right, Doc, that was all I just want to say about the 7-Eleven scoop. I don't know because I know you don't go into 7-Eleven scoop.
Occasionally I get a Slurpee. I'm waiting for you to get your iPhone 6. I'm waiting for you to walk in with your iPhone 6, Dave.
He does a 20-hour.
I think you're right.
The iPhone 6, is that really happening?
Yeah, it's
that's just a bigger screen, right?
It's a bigger screen, that's it. But they also have some...
Because they're worried about Samsung, because those Samsungs...
Yeah, so they got the iPhone 5 is a 4-inch screen, and then this... They got two screens, 4.7-inch and 5.5-inch.
I got a mini pad, I don't care.
Yeah,
I bought a mini pad just last week. I don't care.
I know. I'm with you. That's all I need.
I don't need a big honking phone in my
pocket. An iPad mini. That's all I need. That's exactly right. I mean, Doc, I see all these people walking around with these giant Samsung phones. Like, where do you put them?
You remember the Etch-a-Sketch? It's as big as a stinking Etch-a-Sketch. I don't need an Etch-a-Sketch in my pocket. No.
And you're making a call like this.
Yeah, hello.
Right?
That's right.
That's stupid. No. Get the mini pad and get the iPhone accessory. That's all.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
You're agreeing with me, Doc?
Yeah.
You okay? You're running a fever?
I, I actually don't like a giant phone.
I don't either.
Because I just use it for email.
I use earbuds, right. So it doesn't matter to me what the phone. If I need to see something, I get on the mini pad.
Exactly. That's right. Okay. Exactly right.
Can I be excused now?
Yeah, you can be excused.
Can I leave class? Can I get a note from the
deacon? But you need to tell us where the 7-Eleven is.
All right, I will. Bye now.
Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, 820 AM, 107.7 FM HD2. We will be right back after this.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. More of Tech Talk Radio, presented by Stratford University, coming up in a moment. What's the latest innovation in IT degrees? It's the Stratford University innovative approach that turns marketable skills into an employable edge to get you hired faster in today's hottest fields like cybersecurity, data mining, and mobile networking. At Stratford, our IT instructors bring their own business world experience right into the classroom with real-world problem-solving projects structured like a real business, empowering you with real hands-on skills so you can hit the ground running doing exactly what you learn in the classroom, right in the workplace. It's all part of our proven learn-by-doing approach to IT. Every class, every degree, every day. We offer bachelor's, master's, and associate degree programs at our convenient campus locations in Tyson's Corner, Woodbridge, and Alexandria. Contact us today at stratford.edu or give us a call at 800-444-0804. Stratford University. Changing lives, one student at a time.
If it's technology, it's Tech Talk Radio. IT trends, software, the internet, and IT careers. Here's Dr. Richard Schertz of Stratford University with Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. We're in the virtual faculty lounge at Stratford University talking technology. Now let's go back and talk about this digital archiving again, this project that I had. I had to go back. I actually had 6 hard drives. They went back to the early 90s, and I actually had never realized this is a problem. But I have so many different outdated file formats. I had a bunch of Lotus files, Lotus, which had an extension .123. Then I had the newer Lotus files that had an extension WK4. Then I wrote a big DBase program back then. My first student information system I wrote in DBase 4. I had all these DBase 4 programs, DBase 4 files there that, of course, I couldn't read. And our catalog used to be in Ventura Publisher. So I had Ventura Publisher files from the first Ventura Publisher. I even had graphic files that were in the old GEM format. So... And I'm sitting here, and I'm saying, it's great to save these, but I can't even open them.
Uh-huh.
So, I began to realize that if you're going to start saving old files, you have to have an archival strategy. So you need to keep one hard drive that you can really boot up that has all these old programs on it. Or because I can't even if I had DBase 4, I couldn't install it on my laptop because it's a 64-bit system, or my desktop, it's all 64-bit. And so so I really need to go back. If I want to keep these files, I'm going to have to really work on this. And as far as the pictures that I found this one hard drive. I'd forgotten about this load of pictures. I didn't even have them backed up anywhere. And this particular hard drive dated back to the early 90s. It was only a 40-gigabyte hard drive. When I tried to pull them out, there were a number of corrupted pictures on there, and so I had to go in there and find out which pictures files were corrupted. Then I had to actually try to delete them, but I couldn't delete them because it would hang up the file. Mm-hmm. I tried to do a disk scan in order to fix the bad sectors. That didn't work. I couldn't recover those files, so I lost I didn't lose that many pictures out of, say, 5,000 pictures were on there. I lost 8 pictures.
That's not bad.
Which, wasn't bad, but those 8 pictures were scattered throughout. So if I just take the whole block of pictures and try to copy them, as soon as we get to a bad picture, it would stop copying. And so it took me about 2 hours to identify the bad pictures and get them all done. So it was a big project. And now But now I'm thinking that, you know, with all of this hard drive stuff and old hard drives, I'm thinking cloud storage is looking better and better. You know, you put it on the cloud and it's just there.
Well, and you know, but here's the thing. I mean, when you saved all of this stuff at the time, you probably thought, well, this is going to be good forever. At some point, the cloud is probably going to be,
well,
right?
except they keep renewing. It's not hardware specific.
Uh-huh.
You know, they just put in new hardware and it's your stuff's distributed around multiple machines. So. Mm-hmm. So you don't have this hardware problem because, you know, I was just stacking up these hard drives and it didn't occur to me this problem of reading old files and being able to convert them. So I think this whole area of digital archiving is kind of an interesting field. And I think and a lot of the files that I found go back to the history of Stratford University. These are files that I really wanted to keep.
Yeah, sure.
Some of the old documents. I mean, I found a scanned letter when we expanded to the fifth floor at the Falls Church. I have a letter there from Al Gore, when he was vice president. I mean,
you definitely want to keep that.
Well, you know, I mean, I'd forgotten about it. It was a scanned image. Fortunately, it was a PDF image, so I could actually read it. But that was an interesting experience. Now let's talk about the device of the week.
Yes,
GoTenna.
Mm-hmm.
Now GoTenna lets users create their own closed network on which they can communicate. It's kind of a good idea. They've got a Kickstarter kind of project going on now. The GoTenna transmitters work in pairs. Now these transmitters can communicate up to 50 miles, but in order to get 50 mile transmission, you have to be 500 feet high.
Okay.
So if you're only like holding it, like you're only 6 feet high, you know, you just put it on your backpack or 5.5 feet high, you've got about a 3 mile range.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's say you're walking in a group. Let's show how would you use this. They come in pairs, so suppose you're going to break it up into two groups. So you take one of the GoTennas, and you give the other GoTenna to somebody else in the group who's going to be in the other group when you split. And you take your iPhone, and you pair it to the GoTenna with Bluetooth.
Okay.
And then they take their iPhone, and they pair it to their GoTenna with Bluetooth. So you can basically then send text messages to each other through this GoTenna network. Now...
But you could do this in an area where there's no cell service.
Where there's no cell service.
Okay.
And it uses low-frequency radio waves. It's got 151 megahertz transmitter. It's a 2-watt transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, actually, if you could get high enough, you can get pretty good range. So I could see this would be useful if you were, like, in a remote area and then you were hiking and you were, you'd want to just communicate within a few miles. GoTenna also has an app that actually has offline maps that are in your phone. So you can – so if in case you're trying to show somebody where you are, you can actually put a pin in the offline map and then they can see where you are on the map. So that's all offline. You can also – suppose you've got 6 people and they've all got GoTennas because everybody wants to have their own little GoTenna deal.
Sure.
You can actually send a private message to one of the other GoTennas and the other people can't see it. Now, the co-founders, Daniela and Jorge Perdomo, came up with the idea during Superstorm Sandy because during that emergency, all the cell phone signals were being dropped. Mm-hmm. Nobody could make a phone call. And yet, if you had to reach somebody in the area where you had emergency people, you would have to do that. So it could work at a festival where there's not much going on there. Now, the GoTennas are available for pre-order for $149 a pair. That'd be $75 each. Once they raise their full amount of money, it's going to double. You can go to GoTenna.com. And you can look at it, and you can order it. Listen, the show's up. It just went so fast. We love your emails. Email us at techtalk@stratford.edu. And check out the Stratford programs by going to stratford.edu and tell them you heard about them on Tech Talk Radio.
If you tuned in later, would like to hear the show again, it will replay at 2 o'clock tomorrow here on Federal News Radio. We'll see you next week.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. The Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, American University Eagles, Washington Nationals, and the Washington Capitals. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Sports here on the radio today. The Nats are in Cincinnati to take on the Reds. That game starts at 4 o'clock. Our pregame coverage at 3:30 here on Federal News Radio. The forecast for today is going to be mostly cloudy, a chance for thunderstorms, and a high today near 88 degrees. 73 right now outside of studios at 10 AM.
Press conference.